Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. Good evening. Good evening to everyone out there in Radio Land. Tonight, we are going to discuss an important issue addressed in Congressional Committee this past week, the reform of the VA Disability Claims and Appeals System. It's a big issue with ramifications likely to last for decades, considering how difficult it is for Congress to pass major reform legislation. Before we get started on that topic, I will remind our listeners around the country that the Veterans News Hour is a show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Yep, Richard, the big news, as you said, for veterans this week in Congress deals with reforming the claims and the appeal system. It's a huge problem that's long overdue for fixing. So what can you tell us about developments this week, Rick?
Well, on Tuesday, May 2nd, Subcommittee on Disability Assistance and Memorial Affairs Chairman Mike Bost, Republican from Illinois, and Ranking Member Elizabeth Esty, Democrat from Connecticut, introduced bipartisan, bicameral legislation to modernize the appeals process at the Department of Veterans Affairs. The House bill is H.R. 2288. The Senate's counterpart is S-1024. The members released the following statements, and I quote, "I am proud to introduce this long overdue legislation to provide veterans with a streamlined process to have their appeals decided in a timely manner," said Congressman Mike Bost. "As of March 1st, 2017, 470,000 veterans are still waiting on a decision from the VA. This is unacceptable, and I thank President Trump and Secretary Shulkin for making appeals reform a priority for this administration. When the brave men and women of our military return home from their service, they deserve to receive the benefits they were promised in a timely manner," said Congressman Elizabeth Esty. And in Connecticut and across the country, appeals to claims are backing up. "When a veteran asks my office for help appealing their claim, it is deeply frustrating to have to explain that the process could take more than 5 years. We have to do better. This legislation is a good bipartisan step forward to cut down on these delays, attack the looming appeals backlog, and most importantly, put our veterans first. I thank Subcommittee Chairman Mike Bost and Ranking Member Esty for taking the lead on this important issue on behalf of the House, and I appreciate Chairman Isaacson leading the way in the Senate," said Congressman Rowe. "There's no question VA's current appeals process is broken. This new system would help VA move from the backlog of appeals so veterans waiting on their disability decision can have peace of mind. Here is some background according to the House Committee press release, and I quote, the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017 would create three lanes for veterans appeals, including the local higher level review lane in which an adjudicator reviews the same evidence considered by the original claims processor, the new evidence lane in which the veteran could submit new evidence for review and have a hearing, and the board lane in which jurisdiction for the appeal would transfer immediately to the Board of Veterans Appeals. The bill would give the secretary the authority to test the new system prior to full implementation and would allow some veterans already going through the appeals process to adopt into the new system. It would also require VA to provide a comprehensive plan for processing legacy appeals. This legislation is co-sponsored by every member of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. I know, David, you and I both watched the hearing itself, and it was very interesting. And what more can you tell us?
Well, you mentioned from the House press release, that they called it a bipartisan and bicameral legislation. Bipartisan meaning the two major political parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. Bicameral meaning simply both houses of Congress, the House and the Senate, both have corresponding legislation. As you said, the House bill is H.R. 2288, and the Senate's bill is S. 1024. When you said a moment ago that it was co-sponsored by every member of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, well, there's 24 committee members, 14 Republicans and 10 Democrats. So it tells you a lot already. They had this hearing this past week on May the 2nd, a week ago today, actually. And so you have all 24 members of the committee signing up to it. That already tells you it's going to pass the committee at some point, at least you would think it would. And then on the Senate side, they had Senator Isaacson from Georgia, Republican, that sponsored the Senate version that got introduced just last week as well. It hasn't been to a Senate hearing. Then they have 8 co-sponsors so far on the Senate side, 6 Democrats, 1 Republican, and 1 Independent. So the Democrats, the co-sponsors so far on the Senate side, far more Democrats than Republicans, but it's early on. I mean, it's the way that things work. Easily could have more co-sponsors sign up since the legislation was just introduced last week. But the Senate also had a press release from a week ago issued by Senator Johnny Isaacson of Georgia. He's the chairman of the Senate committee, and also by Senator Richard Blumenthal, who's a Democrat from the state of Connecticut. And they announced, too, that, you know, that they've introduced this legislation in the Senate, and they pointed out how on the appeal side, the VA appeal side, things have gotten worse in the last couple years. They went from the number of pending appeals in 2015 of 380,000 to the current number, about 470,000. That's more than a 20% increase in 2 years. And obviously, they all say it's unacceptable. We've known that. Those of us that represent and advocate for veterans have known for a very long time that the system is broken. What's interesting in the Senate press release is that Senator Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, he said, and I quote, by overhauling the VA appeals process, this bipartisan legislation would dramatically shorten the average wait time for an appeal from 5 years to 125 days. That's what he says. He says it's going to be a streamlined process, will provide veterans with timely, accurate answers on their appeals so they can access the benefits they need and deserve. Now, I read that statistic where Senator Blumenthal says they're going to reduce the appeal time from 5 years to 125 days. I applaud that. That's wonderful. I think it's kind of wishful thinking, at least even with the bill that they've offered, makes you wonder whether that's going to happen. But as you said, the Senate's version of the bill is like the House, and as you said a few moments ago, Rick, that the idea is that they're going to redesign the appeals process. Once an initial decision is made, when a veteran files a claim and their local regional office makes a decision, if the veteran is unhappy with it, then there'll be different paths, and we're going to talk more this evening about the particulars of that, which I think is very important. This might not be the most exciting subject in the world, but I can tell you, for veterans with disabilities and for their family members, this is extremely important. This bill is something that people have talked about for a long time. There was a version of it that passed the House last year, but after the November election, you have a new Congress. It's the 115th Congress. So they've got to reintroduce legislation because it didn't pass the Senate last year. It never became law. So now they're kind of starting from scratch, and they've got this this version that they call the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. That's the title of it. And I urge our listeners to follow this. This is going to be extremely important, and it's going to affect not only them but future decades, future generations of veterans, because the way the VA and the Congress works, once they pass what they consider a major piece of legislation, major overhaul, They're going to sit back. It's going to take years for them to even see if it works. And that's why we want to talk tonight about some of the details and also focus on one particular veterans group who I think has really stood out. So,
well, David, you bring something up that's I'm kind of curious. And I know, you know, you're retired lieutenant colonel, and when you separated and got into civilian life and you practiced law and you started doing a lot of the veterans work before I did, when was, you know, giving me a little bit of history in terms of where we are today. I mean, how what we're dealing with right now, how long has that been in place?
When you listen to the members of Congress that talk about this reform bill, they say, well, that the appeal system dates back to the 1930s. Well, that's only half true because there was major reform in the late 1980s, which included when Congress created the Veterans Court, the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. And that was a court that before 1988 never even existed, but many people had called for a court like that for many years, because before that, if a veteran had a claim and they appealed it, disability claim, the highest it could go was still within the VA, which is an administrative agency. The highest it could go was to the Board of Veterans Appeals, which still exists today. But in 1988, the Congress created this court, which provides veterans the opportunity to appeal outside of the VA. And since 1988, and even up through the year 2000, Congress continued to make changes in the system. Most of those changes, particularly when they passed the Veterans Claims Assistance Act, which I believe was in the year 2000, it was designed to make it more user-friendly. It did not totally revamp the appeal system as it is now, but it did make it easier for veterans to get their claims initially considered and make other changes. Of course, what we've seen in following years has been many changes in the substantive law, meaning the law that grants benefits, and not as many changes in the process. And what we're talking about with this legislation is the process, that the steps that a veteran has to go to if he or she is unhappy with the regional office's decision on a disability claim. So when you hear congressmen saying, well, this system's been around since the 1930s, that's only half true, because the system has been revamped somewhat over the years. So now we've got these bills, House and the Senate side, the Veteran Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. Quite frankly, with all the support that we see on the House and the Senate, I think it's probably going to go somewhere. So that's why it's really important for veterans and their families to pay attention to this. So, Rick, I know you have some information from the Senate Committee summary of the bill about some of the particulars, what specifically this bill is supposed to do. Could you tell us a bit about that?
That's correct, David. According to the Senate Committee summary of the bill, and I quote, the Veteran Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017 would overhaul the VA's current appeals process and include safeguards to help ensure that veterans, their families, and their survivors are better served by the VA's appeals system. It overhauls the current appeals process. One, it includes appeals process reforms consistent with a proposal developed collaboratively by the VA, veterans groups, and other stakeholders. Two, it creates three options for veterans to satisfy with the initial decisions on their claims. They can seek higher and level review by a regional office on the same evidence presented to the original claims processors. They can file a supplemental claim with a regional office that would include the opportunity to submit additional evidence, or they can appeal directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals, resulting in a possible hearing and or opportunity to submit additional evidence.
Well, those are some of the key provisions. The Senate, in their summary of the bill, also point out a few other things that the Senate asserts are safeguards to protect veterans and their families. And those safeguards include supposedly, I'm adding the word supposedly here, supposedly to ensure that the current pending appeals will be acted upon as quickly as possible, because, again, we've got a backlog of about 470,000 claims that are already in the appeal system. Also, that this bill will require the United States Government Accountability Office to review the VA's plan for addressing pending appeals and implementing the new appeal system, which, if I could add as a side note, I think is a great thing, because the GAO, which years ago was called the General Accounting Office, then they changed the name to Government Accountability Office, is an outside of the VA agency that does audits and inspections of other government agencies, and they issued a report earlier this year which partly called the VA to task, which I think is really needed. The VA does have its own inspector general system, but and they will sometimes offer some pretty self-critical reports of different VA services and organizations, but I think it's important to have the GAO involved. This bill, another safeguard, supposedly, is that it gives the VA the authority to test out this new appeal system on a smaller scale. Makes a lot of sense, right? Another safeguard is to require the Secretary to certify to Congress that the VA has the necessary resources to implement the new system, as well as to address pending and new appeals in a timely manner before the new system takes effect. So that'll be interesting to see how much scrutiny Congress will give to this report when the Secretary at some point in the future, if and when this bill gets passed and signed into law, the Secretary has to certify that the VA has the necessary resources, which translates in a lot of ways to people power. Do they have enough people that are going to be able to handle these cases that already exist, plus new ones? Some other safeguards that they have, and this next one I think is very important, it will protect the effective date of benefits that are awarded, once they're awarded, by dating back to the original filing of the claim if the veteran has filed supplemental claims, including after a decision from the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, which is important because half the battle with the VA is winning your case, getting your disability service connected and then fairly rated. Another battle is when's the effective date. In other words, how far back do they have to pay you? The rules are incredibly complicated. Entire books could be written just on that issue alone. And this bill does purport to recognize the importance of an earlier effective date. Another safeguard is to allow the VA to develop policies to permit veterans to have information, to modify information in their notices of disagreement if they appeal to the BVA, the Board of Veterans Appeals, or if they change the options. In other words, if they want to change the lane they're in as far as how they're responding to a decision. There's also a safeguard to require the VA to provide expedited treatment for claims that are returned and remanded. But that's really nothing new. Richard, you know that most of the remands we see from the Board of Veterans Appeals, it'll say this case is supposed to be expedited. And I've always joked that the VA has two speeds, slow and even slower. So we'll see. But
well, you know, David, in addition to that, you know, I go down to the VA a couple times a month to inquire about some of our cases, and I've acquired some good relationships down there in room 222 in Bay Pine. And you know, when I bought that company, you know, the fact that these cases are supposed to be expedited, and the staffer just looked at me and started laughing. And I said, "Why are you laughing?" And he said, "Well, you used the word expedited." He goes, "The BVA has no idea what goes on down here. We're not expediting anything, no matter what they say." Now, this is a court order telling these people down at the regional office to expedite this case for certain reasons, whether it's because of the health of the particular veteran or the case has been around for so long, but the court's saying you got to move this case along, and yet the regional office just says, "Well, you know, we have our own pace down here."
Yeah, well, I could add something there. I think perhaps part of the cynicism on the part of the regional office personnel is that they look at the Board of Veterans Appeals and they say those folks don't even expedite things ever. And I'll give you an example from from a case that we have right now. It's an elderly veteran. The Board of Veterans Appeals long ago said that it would put the case on its expedited docket. We had a hearing before a Board of Veterans Appeals judge last July of 2016. It is now May, 10 months later, and guess what? We still don't have a decision after that hearing. And this is a case on their expedited docket. In other words, a case that's been advanced ahead of other veterans' cases because of the veteran's age, elderly age, and poor health. So the whole system is broken, and I think it's important that we examine, now that Congress is taking some serious steps to what they think is going to reform and fix these problems, I think it's really important to examine that. So I know, Rick, that's something we
yeah, you know, David, it's something that really bothers me a great deal. You know, my experience has always been in the civil and criminal area of law up until you and I organized this firm 5 years ago. And, you know, there's a conscious effort, especially in the courts of New Jersey and New York, to move criminal cases and civil cases and family cases. Not so much down here in Florida, from what I'm saying, but, you know, I mean, judges will get their hands slapped if they don't move things along. And you know, in this system with the VA, and I just don't see it. So on the face of it, you know, those ideas seem very interesting. But what they do, but what will they do to cut the current existing backlog that exists out there? What will the VA do about this? That is less clear. And David, you and I have talked about this. Unless the VA dramatically increases the number of employees handling those cases, which are on appeal, while also not depleting the personnel handling other work such as initial claims, the problem will not be solved, in our opinion. You know, we've mentioned this statistic probably every show. There are about 30,000 cases pending on appeal in the regional office in St. Petersburg, with approximately 28 to 30 decision review officers called DROs to handle those cases. Now, you know, I've been critical of the DROs with some of their decisions and some of the things that they've said in our hearings in the past. But one thing I can say, and that is that you cannot expect these DROs to have to handle 1,000 cases each, and to give those cases the kind of thorough inquiry and review and detailed review that, you know, the veterans are entitled to reach a good decision. That's why these cases probably end up at the Board of Veteran Appeals.
Right.
Because they just can't do it. And so I don't blame them for that. I mean, imagine, David, if we had 100 DROs sitting in St. Pete, you know, handling 30,000. That's 300 per person. That's doable.
Right.
And if those cases weren't moving, then I would turn to the DRO and say, you know something, you're not doing your job because you don't really have a huge caseload. And you can make headway on this. So, you know, and the same at the Board of Veteran Appeals. You know, we've talked about the fact that in, I guess it was February, 42 additional Board of Veteran Appeals judges were appointed. Now, remember, federal appeals judges, that's for the country. You know, so that's not going to cut it either. And the only reason that they got approved is because under Obama, they had already been earmarked. So they got in under the old system. So, you know, we've got to put bodies in the trenches, and there's plenty of money. You know, the budget for the VA, there's going to be a 6% increase, and there's only, according to the current what I'm reading, there's only three departments that are going to get an increase in their departments, and the VA is one of them. It's going to be a 6% increase to a $4.4 billion. It would be great if some of that money would go to hiring people and put them in the trenches and start working on these numbers. Because, you know, one of the things that they said about this new system is it's going to take about 18 months of training before it's implemented. Then they're going to take out of the current system of staffers, they're going to put one-third on the new system, and two-thirds of the people will still handle the old cases, the 470,000 that you talked about earlier.
Right.
So, you know, to me, you know, this is it's almost like smoke and mirrors that and I think it's great that our politicians are up there trying to get something done. But, you know, at the end of the day, are they really getting something done? Or are they just being able to go back to their constituents and saying, hey, we got the D.C., you wanted us to do something with the VA system, and look what we did. Well, at the end of the day, did they really do something that improved the system? You know, you said something earlier about the old system when it first started, and you used the word to make it easier for veterans. Well, forgive me if I'm wrong here, but wasn't that the whole idea to begin with?
Absolutely.
The idea wasn't for a veteran to have to hire a lawyer,
right?
To get them through the system. They were supposed to be able to separate from their armed services if they had some sort of disability, that they could then file the necessary paperwork, and then someone within the system would walk them through, and hopefully the veteran would then receive the kind of compensation that he was entitled to based upon the injury that he or she sustained while in service. And, you know, you and I, when we speak to people, we show them the two volumes of books that the veteran's supposed to know. I think it's, about 6,000 pages. I'm looking at it right now. You know, that there's no way that these veterans, especially someone who's suffering from psychological issues, TBI, traumatic brain injury, I mean, you can't expect these men or women to be able to handle that. So it just seems that what this new system that they're proposing, it's just going to continue to be complicated.
Right. If I could add something here that, as you said, ideally the system would be one in which a wounded or disabled veteran leaving active duty goes to the VA and says, I'm injured, I have these disabilities, I think they're related to my military service. I would like whatever the law provides for me financially, in terms of rehabilitation, as far as occupational training, those kinds of things, and have the VA do its job so that it even minimizes the need for any kind of representative. But for decades, we have these veteran service organizations like the American Legion, like the VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, like Disabled American Veterans, DAV, and there are many other organizations, including ones that are more specialized in particular wars, like Vietnam Veterans of America, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, Concerned Veterans of America. The list is really quite long, but the VA considers as stakeholders for purposes of consulting with this legislation, primarily the largest three ones, as far three groups, American Legion, VFW, and Disabled American Veterans. You also have Paralyzed Veterans of America, another big group. But all those veteran service organizations, and some of those actually have offices in the regional office facility and in some medical facilities where they're actually located on the VA property. And a lot of veterans that aren't really informed assume that they're working, that those representatives are working for the VA, and they also, many of them don't entirely trust these veteran organizations because they believe that they're too much in cahoots with the VA. And Rick, you and I have had clients that have told us that that they had initially not appealed decisions because their veteran service officer had told them, don't appeal because you're not likely going to win, and not only that, but then the VA will take away what you already have, which these are cases that we've ended up going on to win for these veterans. But I think my two cents about this, if they're really serious about returning the system to the way it should be, and the duty to assist veterans that's on the part of the VA by statute, it ought to work something like this. The veteran goes in, files a claim with a veteran service officer representative, and before the VA claims adjudicator makes a decision, they pick up the phone and they talk. They talk through the case with the representative and the veteran and say, look, this is how we see it. Are we missing anything? Anything that other evidence that you might want to offer? Or what are your thoughts on the C&P exam that was done? And talk through that. I think then they'd find that that would decrease the number of veterans that would want to appeal because they were giving an opportunity before even the initial decision to know what the VA sees as shortcomings in the claims, and they can try to address it then. Now, the VA will not always, even then, not always do what the veteran wants. I understand that, but at least there's an opportunity before the claim then goes into a multi-year appeal. So that's just my thoughts. And, Rick, I know we want to talk more about the pros and cons of this proposed legislation.
I know you brought up about the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars and Disabled American Veterans who support the legislation, specifically the President, John Rowan. What can you tell us about him?
Well, John Rowan is the president of Vietnam Veterans of America, and I'd like maybe in a future show to get someone from the Vietnam Veterans of America on our show. But meanwhile, I've taken a close look at Vietnam Veterans of America, their written presentation that they submitted to the House committee this past week. It's very well done. And in 3 weeks, we're going to have another veterans group representative, Mr. John Wells, who is a retired Navy officer, as well as an attorney. He's the executive director of the Military Veterans Advocacy Incorporated, which is a nonprofit group. He's going to be on our show because his group, along with Vietnam Veterans of America, are two of a very small number of veterans groups that are opposing this legislation. So I wanted to take some time in this show, because this issue is so important, to talk about some of the issues that have been raised by Vietnam vets. But let me first talk about John Rowan. He's the national president of Vietnam Veterans of America. He was elected as their president back in August of 2005. He enlisted in the Air Force in 1965, 2 years after graduating from high school in Queens, New York. He went to language school.
Hey, yeah. David?
Yes.
I think we have a caller. I think
okay.
Bob's on the line.
Okay, very good. Let's go ahead and hey, Bob?
Yes.
Hello, Bob. This is David. Welcome.
Hey, David. Listen, I have a couple of questions. And one is, I have an appeal that's been in. And they've looked at it a little bit.
Hello, Bob. This is David. Welcome. Okay.
Thank you, David.
Hey, Bob, you may want to turn down your radio in the back. We're getting an echo
okay.
here.
All
we're
right.
getting an echo.
Okay. I see. Yeah, I see it now. I have a couple of questions. I have an appeal that's been in for 6.5 years now, you know. And the VA has addressed it a little bit at times, but they've never really actually ruled on my case, you know, at this point in time. You know, they've never made a decision, let's put it that way. Okay. So with this new program, from listening to your podcast so far, it almost sounds like I'd be better off staying in this program and not opting out into the new program. Am I hearing that right? You know,
well, that's going to be that's a great question, Bob. And as Rick had said earlier, and when you look at the wording of this proposed bill, even once the bill gets passed by both houses of Congress, the House and the Senate, and then it goes to the President,
right?
And if he signs it, even within the bill, there's a time frame where they talk about it being effective 540 days, which is roughly a year and a half, the time frame Rick was talking about, or possibly even later after that. And at that point, then, and there's wording in the bill that says that veterans who have been issued a statement of the case or supplemental statement of the case after that can then opt into this new program. So my answer to your question, Bob, is, it may be possible that once this whole program, assuming it becomes law, gets implemented, you might find that the VA doesn't even give you that option to go into this new system. However, That, to me, that's not necessarily going to be a bad thing the way I interpret this new system. And the reason I say that is this. Under the new system, the VA no longer has a duty to assist you at any level above the initial decision. And since you've been appealing for 6.5 years, I have to assume, and you tell me more specifically where your case is at. Is it still at, let's say, the decision review officer stage? Is it the Board of Veterans Appeals stage? Is it at the court? But the point is, under the current system, under the law, both the decision review officer and the Board of Veterans Appeals still have a duty to assist you. And what that translates into is if they see evidence that's out there that could be developed, at records that need to be obtained, that they have a duty to tell you about that. And in our practice in representing veterans, we routinely make it part of our presentation to try to engage the decision review officer or the Board of Veterans Appeals judge into some sort of dialogue to get a sense of how they see the case. But if you read this proposed legislation, you'll see that that duty to assist is eliminated. Now, there is language in there that says that if the Board of Veterans Appeals sees a duty to assist error, they can remand it back. But the point is, I see this new system as something that is even more adversarial to the veteran and less helpful. And as a side note, I really don't see, unless they devote the personnel to it, I don't see how it's going to be any faster. And certainly, you know, Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut, who predicts it will cut the wait time from 5 years to 125 days. Wow, you know, I'll believe that when I see it.
That's almost unbelievable. Yes, right.
I'd be shocked
if that happened.
I wonder what he's smoking. I don't know.
Well, I have one other question too, and it's not really related to this, but you know, President Trump signed an executive order this past week to even improve the Veterans Choice Program even more. How would a veteran get a copy of that legislation or that actually an executive order, which is supposed to take effect, I think he said, immediately? You know, and of course we know what's going on with the hospitals and everything. Anything that would improve the care,
right,
you know, it would be nice to know what is going on, but how do we find out? How do we get that in print?
Well, a lot of this information, fortunately, is available. In addition to executive orders that he's signed on a number of things, he's also signed legislation that both of the House and the Senate, an act passed recently extending the Veterans Choice Program. And if you want, I'd be happy to send you copies of all those things. Perhaps if you just want to send me an email, I can give you my email address right now, or you can get it from
I'll send you a little note, and I'll request a copy of it.
I'll be happy to send that to you.
So
you have it. And one thing I would add about the Veterans Choice Program is what's happened so far is kind of a Band-Aid. There have been a lot of critics even of the Veterans Choice Program, although it is a step in the right direction. But Secretary David Shulkin, who's the new VA secretary, has made it clear from the very beginning that there needs to be many other improvements. What his goal is to try to get the best of what the VA already offers, and then from there, the best of what the civilian healthcare system offers. And it's clearly concerned about prioritizing, you know, those that need care urgently and identify those that do need care and hopefully make that happen. But meanwhile, they've got a tremendous shortfall of personnel on the healthcare side, you know, tens of thousands of people. So it kind of forces them, if they're going to meet some better time standards, to look to the private sector.
Right.
But they're doing a
better job now, because I've noticed that at least the hospitals anymore, when they'll tell you pretty quickly that, Mr. Lane, you know, if you can't come in and you can't, we can't get you in that 30 days, we have to let you know that we can refer you out to someone else if you would desire to do that, you know.
and that's important. Although, as Secretary Shulkin said, he had an interview I watched a couple months ago on this issue, and his point is the 30-day standard itself sometimes misses the mark because some ailments or illnesses can't wait 30 days.
That's still too long, you know, in some
it's
cases.
It's ridiculous.
Sure.
Yeah, so they need to have some faster track for things that require immediate care. But in any event, Dr. Shulkin, with his medical background and hospital administration, et cetera, I think is primed.
Things will get better.
He's primed on the healthcare side. My concern on the benefits side, from what I've read,
right.
he is either being badly served by VA personnel who have a vested interest in maintaining the status quo of working at their slow pace, and they don't have the sense of urgency. Those of us,
right.
like yourself, that are veterans, we served in the military, I was in the Air Force, whenever there was a crisis, there was a tremendous sense of urgency. There's a sense of urgency when you go to war. In the VA system, there is no sense of urgency on the claims on the appeal side. There's none at all.
It almost makes you feel like they really don't even give a damn. They don't really care.
Which is the only fair interpretation, because they're smart enough to know. It's not a matter of that. You just have to figure like they haven't fixed the problem because they really don't care. You know, a lot of veterans have then made that into. The perception is that the VA's policy in many cases is to delay and deny and delay and wait till they die. And tens of thousands of veterans have died waiting on their benefits.
Just waiting, waiting. Well, I won't take any more of your time, and I will send you a little request and to get a copy of that executive order,
Right, very good. Well, thank you for calling,
sure
Bob.
Thanks for calling, Bob.
I sure
thank you very much.
Yes, and everything seems very informative. I'm enjoying listening to it.
Well, thank you.
Okay,
thank you very
thank
much.
You.
That's what
thank
we're here
you
for.
Now. Thank
so
you.
Take care.
Okay.
Take care, Bob.
Thank you now.
You know, okay. David, we got a new case in today, and the veteran is being denied reimbursement for his medical expense. And what happened was he's service connected for his back. And one day he was in such pain, he literally could not get out of bed, and he was just able to get to his local hospital, Citrus Memorial Hospital, which was about 0.3 mile away from his house. That's the best he could do.
Wow.
And the VA is denying the reimbursement because they said he needed to go to Gainesville, which was 2.5 hours away from his house.
Wow.
And they cite all sorts of language in there saying, that he should have done A, B, and C before he went to Citrus Memorial. So now we're appealing that day. We're appealing.
Well, yeah, you gotta fight them. You cannot accept it.
It's just crazy, It's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, let me go back, if I could, and continue. I was discussing Vietnam Veterans of America talking about their president, John Rowan. And the reason I want to give background about John Rowan was because he presented what I consider an excellent written presentation to Congress this past week. And not only does Vietnam Veterans of America oppose this legislation that we've been talking about, but they made a point of putting it in bold print and underlining it that they strongly oppose this legislation, and then they provided, more than half a dozen very detailed reasons about why this bill not only doesn't fix the new program, but it makes it worse. We got another call on line three. Doug. Go ahead, Doug.
Russell Smith.
Hello, Russell.
Yeah.
Hi, this is David Corey, and Rick Hurley's with me. How are you? Hello, Russell. We seem to have
yes.
a little bit of a. How are you?
Oh well, not too good. I got a claim in. It's been in for 2 years, and I'm really seeking information. I was just told that I got 5 years to live. I got 3 years to live. Now, if it takes 5 years or 6 years to get my claim in. If I pass away and it's still being processed, does my family benefit from it?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry for the condition you're in, and what needs to be done is to inform the VA so that they know of your condition. The VA will expect medical documentation, but that can be used to at least attempt to expedite your case, advance it on the docket. And I know, but then to answer your specific question, yes, there is a process, and we've had to help many veterans' families when the veteran passes on, where there's a process that they term, the word is substitution, where the veteran's spouse and in some situations other family members can then basically carry on the battle against the VA. The rules are somewhat complicated as far as what specific benefits and effective dates and other things can as they could in any claim. But the short answer to your question is yes, there is a process to continue that
yes,
on.
There is
and go ahead, Rick. Russell, are you still there?
Substitution, where the veteran's spouse and in some situations other family
they got a feedback problem.
The rules are somewhat complicated as far as
Russell. If you could turn off the sound because we're getting an echo. Russell, are you still there?
Go ahead, Rick. Yeah, he's trying to hear you. He's hard of hearing.
I see. Okay, well, yes. If you'd like to ask the question, who is this? Who are we speaking to?
He's trying to hear you. He can't hear you very well. He can hear you on the computer, but he can't hear you on the phone.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, perhaps if you could ask the question on his behalf, because otherwise
okay,
wait
a minute. All right, I turned the volume down on the computer, so now maybe he can hear you.
Okay, and if you'd like to ask his follow-up question, I'd be happy to try to answer it.
You have a follow-up question for him. Or put it in your other ear.
No, I don't have no follow-up question right now. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you
thanks,
very much for calling, Russell.
Much,
okay, take care. Best
yes.
wishes. Okay.
That's another big problem, you know, David, when the family member, when the veteran dies, and I don't think a lot of veterans and their families realize that the surviving spouse can be substituted in and take over the claim. But
right. And in some cases, question. In some cases, depending if the veteran's death can be quote-unquote service-connected, and the rules, there are many different ways to do that, many different rules, different elements, but that can also result in ongoing benefits to the surviving spouse and in some cases to dependent children. It's too detailed to go into right now, but the point that I want to leave with our listeners is that, yes, it's still possible to continue fighting on after the veteran's passing to get retroactive benefits that would go up until the veteran's time of death, but also in some cases prospective continuing benefits to the surviving spouse, minor children, and some other situations as well. So don't give up the fight and make sure you get good representation. That's important. So we've got about 5 minutes left in the show. I want to just briefly cover some of the objections to this bill that we've been talking about from the Vietnam Veterans of America, and in future weeks we're going to be talking more about it. But the VVA, Vietnam Veterans of America, had several objections. And just to talk about some of them, they talk about how the bill fails to address an issue that I was talking about earlier, which is the VA's present inability to properly satisfy its duty to assist veterans at the original claim level, that the VA currently does a very poor job at that to assist veterans. And I said earlier, what I believe would be a solution is to train those claims adjudicators to reach out and have better communication with veterans' representatives and the veterans themselves, particularly when it looks like it's a decision that could be appealed or likely to be appealed. The Vietnam Veteran Organization also says that this bill fails to address the lack of precedent in the current VA claims process and decreases decision finality at all levels of appeal. And let me translate what they're saying there. It basically means that you've got veterans with basically very similar fact situations that are getting different outcomes depending on what regional office they go to, or even which Board of Veteran Appeals judge they go to, where some of the same decisions, same cases, you're getting different outcomes. And this bill fails to address that problem. And by failing to address it, then they're just continuing to perpetuate the problem where you have veterans that need to appeal, and you don't get the finality, which the VA wants and certainly the veteran wants. And let me mention one other thing before I turn it back over to Rick, that the Vietnam Veterans of America also attacks the bill, opposes the bill, because the bill essentially, as I said earlier, it eliminates the VA's duty to assist at the board level. It's very limited applicability there. The bill also encourages veterans not to exercise their right to a board hearing, not to submit additional evidence, and not to have their case reviewed by a veterans law judge. There are incentives in the current bill that if you want your case expedited, you're going to have to waive giving up, you know, submitting new evidence, waive a hearing. And those are all things that any informed advocate for a veteran is going to say can be extremely helpful. On a case that's made it to appeals, you really don't want to take a chance by not trying to submit the evidence. So those are just some of the things, and we'll talk more about it in future weeks. Rick, back over to you.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, the bill is a tool for the VA to more expeditiously process their cases while simultaneously limiting our veterans' due process rights. But, yeah, as you said, David, we're going to be talking more about that in the coming weeks. And we're going to have, as a guest, Mr. John Wells, a retired Navy officer and a lawyer who represents veterans and who is the executive director for the Military Veterans Advocacy Incorporated, which is a nonprofit organization that advocates for veterans' interests. The Military Veterans Advocacy Group has taken a position in opposition to the proposed legislation as currently written, and John Wells will be our guest on May 29th. Finally, before we wrap up the show, an important VA program which we have discussed in previous weeks is worth repeating tonight. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veterans. Give the program a call, toll free, 1-888-823-7458. It's hours on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. David, why don't you take us out?
Yep, and the Veterans Crisis Line, which is a 24/7 crisis line, 1-800-273-8255, and then press the number 1. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255, press number 1. That's the crisis. That's the Veterans Crisis Line. Well, it's about time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank all of you listeners for joining us tonight on BBS Radio. We'd like to thank our show sponsors, which include Corey and Hurley Law Group and also Mr. Charles M. Newman of the state of Florida. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We'd like to invite listeners to become show guests in the future. Sponsors and advertisers, our contact information is on our website, bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. And you can also listen to our archived podcast of our prior shows for your benefit. We'll be back here next Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain Time, and 6 p.m. Pacific Time, bbsradio.com, Station 1. That's our show for tonight. Tune in next week for another great show.
Good night, David.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.